Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday, lively as ever in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, doesn't get any better than Greg Cosell. If you bet football, play fantasy football, or just love to get smarter, 4 decades at NFL Films, Greg Cosell is joining us, and 16-time Emmy winner Tom Rinaldi's on the show today. Known Tom for a long, long time. Great guy. Joy Taylor's joining me. Yeah, Tom.
Really fast, right?
What's that?
This week went really fast.
It really did. Tom Rinaldi called me a month before he was coming to Fox, and he asked me a question, and we talked for about 15 minutes. I've known Tom for a long time, and I got off the phone, and I was like, I wonder why he called me for that question. And then he signed with Fox.
Oh.
When friends called, and I hadn't heard from Tom in a long time, and I'm like, that's great to hear from you. And he asked me a question, and we prattled on for 15 minutes, and I want to know. Tommy became a teammate. And by the way, he's already done his first story, and he was
amazing.
Yeah, like, just get your tissues out for, you know, an hour and a half from
now. So do you get, like, a finder's fee,
Should.
A recruiting fee?
That's exactly. Thank you, Joy Taylor. You know, I was thinking about this. Yesterday, I had to drive around and do a bunch of stuff, so I was listening to all sorts of sports talk radio and, you know, just everybody chopping it up. You know, I was thinking, a lot of people talking about Deshaun Watson. And, in fact, Richard Sherman, great, he'll be a Hall of Fame player, right? He's talking about Deshaun Watson. Everybody's like, you should get out of there, and you should go to the Jets with their new coach, Robert Saleh. Here was Richard Sherman on a Chris Collinsworth podcast.
It would be the most beautiful. Decent offensive line. They'd have to find threats. They'd have to find some offensive weapons. But I think there would be a lot more people excited to be there. You know, I think the free agency market this year is going to be oversaturated because of the salary cap. But that's what I would do. I would be out of there on the first thing smoking.
Okay, I know the teams. It would work with the teams. The Jets have a lot of draft picks. And the Texans need draft picks. And the Jets have a lot of cap space, and the Texans don't have any. I can make an argument for the teams. Has anybody asked Deshaun Watson? Since Deshaun Watson entered the NFL, not only have the Jets failed to make the playoffs, they have the worst record in the league, worse than Detroit. That's what Deshaun Watson sees. In fact, in the last decade, the Houston Texans have made the playoffs seven winning seasons and 6 division titles. That's the last decade. The Jets have 1 winning season. Nobody's asking Deshaun Watson about this. And remember, because he's a star quarterback, he has a no trade clause. He doesn't want to go to the Jets, does he? If I ask you, who are the 5 most dysfunctional teams in the NFL today? You know what you'd find? Most of them were dysfunctional 15 years ago. Why? Because they've had the same owner. Unless you get rid of the owner, you don't get rid of the dysfunction. That's why Cleveland for years and years, they changed a lot of stuff. They had to go through so many coaches and quarterbacks. They finally appear to have the right coach because they had the same owner. So if I'm the agent of Deshaun Watson, no. I'm not letting him go to the Jets. Go look at the Jets roster. Where is it better than the Texans? I found one position, punter. And if you are playing for the Jets and you're a punter, you get a lot of work. But offensive line, Texans actually, they have a star left tackle. Jets don't have a star anywhere in the O-line. Receivers, Texans. Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks, that's way better than anything the Jets have. Jamison Crowder's a slot guy, doesn't run particularly well. Running back, Texans. Tight end, Texans. Where are they better? Jets didn't have a Pro Bowler last year. That's hard. I mean, it's not baseball where everybody gets an All-Star for the All-Star game, but they didn't have a Pro Bowler. There's a lot of places Deshaun Watson could go. Miami's a great fit. Indianapolis is an unbelievable fit. Texans aren't going to trade him in division. New England's a good fit. San Francisco, potentially. But something lost in all this. Everybody's talking about Robert Saleh. Oh, it'd be great. Does everybody understand? When we look at the NFL draft, we often talk about how many players don't make it. There's a lot of busts, even in the first round. We looked it up this morning, even in the top 10 picks. Like 2 to 3 of the top 10 either bust every year or they really disappoint. There's occasional outlier years. But just think about this. There's only 7 head coaches in the NFL currently who have been with their team more than 4 years. There's 32 teams. That's not even a quarter. In fact, Ron Rivera is currently the longest tenured coach in the NFC East. Ron Rivera is. Folks, 50% of coaches are an abject bust. Of the remaining 50%, maybe 10% become great. You think players bust? Coaches bust at a much higher level. So I just think we should probably ask Deshaun Watson where he wants to go, because as much as I lobbied yesterday for the trade to happen, it makes sense for a radio guy when I'm trying to connect the dots with draft picks and salary. You can't let Deshaun Watson go to the Jets. 2 weeks ago, I was imploring Trevor Lawrence shouldn't go to the Jets. Deshaun's better than Trevor Lawrence today, isn't he? I want to talk about this. So Aaron Rodgers he's very happy this year. He's very, very happy. He's talking a lot, and he should. I like when Aaron talks. He's smart. I like when smart people talk. Dumb people, not so much. Smart people talk all you want. So Aaron was talking about his future to the Green Bay Press Gazette. That's a newspaper there. There's like 12 left in the country, apparently. He was talking about his future in Green Bay and how it's he doesn't know how it's going to end up.
I'm thankful for the opportunity again to be leading these guys, to be to have played the way I want to play, to be called upon for a greater leadership role. Those things are really, really important to me. But all that other stuff, Rob, is stuff that I'm just not going to focus on. You know, because it is a beautiful mystery what happens down the line.
I don't think it's a beautiful mystery. I said this 3 days ago. Aaron Rodgers, of every star quarterback in the league, has the cleanest and clearest path to multiple Super Bowls over the next decade. Many of you would say Patrick Mahomes, but the AFC is loaded with great young quarterbacks, and almost all of them, outside of like a Justin Herbert, appear to have a winning, proven veteran head coach or a good head coach. What about Mahomes? Well, what about Josh Allen? They have to face each other for the next 12 years. Let's just go to Aaron Rodgers' path. So let's start in division. That's why Tom Brady won those Super Bowls, right? He dominated his division, got a bye in a home game. In division, Minnesota is trapped with Kirk Cousins' contract. Detroit is currently, quote, evaluating Matt Stafford's contract. And the Bears and Trubisky, oh, just stop. Let's look at his peers' equal talent, like guys in his class in the NFC, because that gets you to Super Bowls. There's two. Russell Wilson. Seattle just hired a new offensive coordinator. And to say that Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have an enigmatic relationship is kind. And they have a battle line. And then there's Tom Brady. Love him, but he's 43. All right. So let's go to the young guns, the young, talented quarterbacks GMs have drafted in the NFC. Jared Goff, his coach essentially benched him this year. Mitch Trubisky, stop it. Kyler Murray, yet to have a winning season. I'm not sure he's got an NFL head coach. Jimmy Garoppolo, according to an NFL reporter, a seasoned NFL reporter a couple weeks ago, I think it was Chris Mortensen. If I'm wrong, I apologize. The Niners are looking to upgrade. And Dak Prescott, I don't know his future. And by the way, after watching Aaron Rodgers this year, your thoughts on Mike McCarthy, kind of like mine? Not Mahomes, not Josh Allen, not Aaron Rodgers' future is not that big of a mystery. He has got one similar-aged peer that has at least resembles his level of talent in the entire conference. It's not the young guns. Brady is old. It's not his division. It's Russell Wilson, who has a defensive older head coach, a new coordinator, at best outside of left tackle, a shaky offensive line, and a relationship with his head coach, which at times feels strained or weird. I think Aaron's future is not a mystery at all. He's going to get to the Super Bowl after this weekend. Not sure if he'll win it. And I think he gets to several. Remember, easier the path for great players, the more Super Bowls you get to. Brady's talent in coaching, no, it was Bye's home field advantage in cold Foxborough was the biggest part of getting to those things. I mean, Brady was a field goal from losing every single Super Bowl he won, except the Rams game. So I think Aaron Rodgers' future is not a mystery at all. It's clean. It's clear. Stay healthy. He's in a bunch.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Kyrie returned for the Nets. They lost to awful Cleveland, and he scored a bunch of points. It's funny because they were 4-0. The Nets had won four straight without Kyrie. And they were 2-0 with KD and Harden. And he comes back against dreadful Cleveland, and they lost. And the guy he's guarding, Colin Sexton, scored 20 straight points in overtime. And by the way, James Harden, not only did they lose to Cleveland, and Colin Sexton, who's Kyrie's guy, score all the points in overtime for Cleveland. James Harden in 51 minutes had 14 shots, which here's the problem. And if you go look at the plus-minus numbers, KD and Harden on the floor were +6. But Harden and Kyrie were -3. KD and Kyrie were -7. So they were better when he was off the floor. This was the same thing with the Nets last year and Kyrie. It's very interesting. What I'm about to say, fans always get this. The media doesn't. Fans understand. For years and years, Joey Sindelar would win the golf long drive contest. He never won tournaments because he couldn't putt. Everybody knows that you can be a great talent. Fans always know this. OBJ is a great talent. But he's hurt a lot, and Baker Mayfield was better when he didn't play. Fans get that. Media struggles with it. The Nets will be worse with Kyrie Irving. He's the only NBA star I can think of in my adult life. Maybe there was another, I couldn't think of it. That I would be willing to trade for role players, and I think I would upgrade. Now, it never works that way. Like you're trading a great player. You know you're not going to get equal value. You're just getting draft picks. You're basically crossing your fingers. With Kyrie, I would trade for role players. And I think a lot of NBA is very unique. Ratings indicate we don't watch the NBA games. We watch the highlights. And Kyrie Irving is an Instagram basketball star. In 15-second clips, he's amazing. If you watch 47 minutes, not so much. He plays no defense. But NBA fans are younger than other sports. They play more video games and often fantasy than other sports. And so you need stars to win video games and fantasy. So in the NBA, it's the one sport where guys that aren't winning basketball players just get defended. Always, Westbrook still gets defended. It's like he's not a winning basketball player. He's just talented. In the NFL, we don't do that. In the NFL, if you don't help the cause to winning, fans are like, I'm out. I'm not. You ask most fans in Cleveland today, if you could trade OBJ this afternoon in Cleveland and get a really good safety, like get an equal player on defense that would shore up the back end of your defense, 75% of Cleveland fans would be like, absolutely, we want to beat the Chiefs. We got to beat Josh Allen. We got to beat Patrick Mahomes. But the NBA is different. We don't watch the games. We watch clips. And in the world of clips, Kyrie is amazing. I was just saying during the break, he's probably the best small finisher I've ever seen in my life. Left hand, right hand. You know, generally your great finishers are, you know, Michael Jordan 6'6", and Kobe and Shaq and LeBron and Durant. And they're big, they're tall, they're long. They get, Kyrie's like my height. He's 6'1.5", and he's an unbelievable finisher. I've never seen a small player finish like him. And again, he's an Instagram basketball star. In clips, he's great. But if you watch over time, last night, Colin Sexton, good player, not great, scored 20 straight points for the Caps. So I think Brooklyn has a chance to be incredibly special with Harden, KD, and role players. I'm just not sure they can come to terms with giving up Kyrie for guys that don't need to score. that need to defend.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I was listening to a lot of sports talk radio yesterday about Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning and should they be in the Hall of Fame, blah, blah, blah. And I've always thought there's a difference between me having an opinion on a radio show. I'm not affecting people's legacy. But if I was a Hall of Fame voter, I'm not only, I'm affecting a player, a dad, a husband, a brother, a legacy. That gold jacket gets you bigger contracts, bigger endorsements. I am changing your children's life. I'm going to take it much more seriously than ad-libbing about Kurt Warner on this show. And though I believe what I'm saying, standards change. You can go out with your wife for dinner, okay? And you wear, you know, a polo shirt. If you go to a wedding with your wife for dinner, you wear a nice suit, right? It's still going out with your wife for dinner. But the standards change. You're going to a wedding. It's more respectful. It matters more than just going out and getting some chicken piccata. So the reality is, I can have opinions, but based on the standards, if I'm a Hall of Fame voter, what would my standard be so that for years and years and years, if players came to me, why didn't you vote me in? I would say, well, I had a standard. Jimmy Johnson used to have this joy for drafting and trading players. People didn't used to trade in the NFL. And Jimmy created a chart. It's still used today.
The value system.
The value system. This is what players are worth. So you're not making it up. I would have the same system. So what would my system be for Hall of Fame? Were you, and it would be different than NFL than NBA, because NBA, you don't have all the injuries. It's not as violent. So I'm not asking you to give me 10 to 12 years of great like the NBA or baseball. Were you top five at your position for two contracts? That is 7 to 8 years. You can't be great for a contract. That's just a, that's not, that's, this is the Hall of Fame. I'm not putting Tom Brady in the same place for a guy that gave me one good contract. I'm not putting him in the same room. That diminishes Tom. Remember, the top of the Hall of Fame doesn't frame it. The bottom does. The bottom does. If you lower the standard, it affects the Hall. Montana, Brady, Peyton, Manning, Favre, that we know they're great. So the bottom is the key. What's the least amount you're letting in? And so my standard would be, if anybody came up, I'd say, were you top five at your position for two contracts? Now, if you're a running back, I'd give you 7 years because it's more violent. Quarterback, I'd want eight. And some guys do sign two contracts, a four and a three. But I want two contracts. Is that a reasonable stand? Now, in that case, Eli and Phillip Rivers, neither is a Hall of Famer. They were not top five quarterbacks.
For 8 years?
For 8 years. No, they weren't. They were never top five. Eli was not.
No, I'm saying that's, I feel like 8 years is.
That's two contracts.
So Terrell Davis
does not get in.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
I would rescind.
You would take him out because he was only great for 4 years.
Okay, I would call him and apologize, but I would say I don't know Terrell, but I'm not diminishing it. He was great for a contract. So Brady's great for eight. You got one guy's great for one.
There's no formula.
No, I have an absolute formula. So there's no emotion, no opinion. Two contracts, top five position. You come up to me at a bar. Frank Gore, nope.
So Gale Sayers, five-time All-Pro.
Sorry.
Out, because he only played 7 years.
Listen, that's the one that'll tick everybody off. One contract. Now, you could say, Gale's interesting. Because Gale, if he played today with the medical advancements, probably his career doesn't end. So if you want a medical exemption, listen, Sandy Koufax in baseball was great for 3 years. He was the greatest pitcher ever, so they let him in. If you want a medical exception or something,
what about
under
Kurt
your
Warner?
Standard, Sandy Koufax wouldn't get in.
No. Baseball, I'm just saying, let's just do football. Two contracts, top five. No exceptions. I'm not going to be whiffing and wavering and
Does winning the Super Bowl count for anything in this formula? Because to me, with Eli, it's the longevity. It's the
longevity.
The consistency was never hurt.
Hey, a lot of people come to work every day.
Tom Brady. They don't get twice. He beat Tom Brady twice.
If I just came to work every day, you'd put me in the Radio Hall of Fame, even if I was just bumping into the walls and couldn't get hockey scores right.
If you, for 2 years of your career, you were better than the best, than you were Howard Stern. Yes.
No.
For 2 years, you beat Howard Stern, and you also were that consistent. Yes.
Beat him in what? Thumb wrestling? What
do you mean? No, you beat him. Like, you beat the ratings.
Is my standard...
I don't think it's unreasonable.
Top five position, two contracts.
8 years is a lot. Is a lot.
What about Kurt Warner?
Yeah,
you said
yeah.
in the past
Kurt
you would
Warner,
put him in.
Again, I would call him, take him out for some sushi, and say, you can't be in. Now, I've said on this show he's in, but my standard changes when I'm affecting families.
If you were voting, this is what you would do.
If I was voting.
So you're not voting. So is Philip and Eli in?
I don't want to. That's another segment.
One more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, Greg Cosell, 41 years, NFL Films, is joining us live as he does on Thursday every time at this time. So what do you make of my goofy Hall of Fame standard? Top five player at your position, two contracts.
I don't know if that would be my standard. I haven't necessarily thought of a standard per se, Colin, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many players at the position with the career of Philip Rivers. So now, to me, you have to decide what matters to you. I mean, obviously, he did not play in a Super Bowl, and Eli Manning won two Super Bowls. Who would you say was a better quarterback throughout their career, Eli Manning or Philip Rivers?
Philip Rivers.
Eli Manning will likely get into the Hall of
That's
Fame
right.
based on two Super Bowl wins.
Which shows you how stupid it is. That's how screwy it is. Eli had four great moments. Philip had like seven really good years. Eight years.
More than that.
Yeah.
More than that. So again, it depends. And I understand both sides. But to me, there's not going to be many quarterbacks with Philip Rivers' career.
That's fair. I like Philip. I like Eli. All right, here we go. Let's start with Green Bay, Tampa Bay. It's really remarkable. As I watched the Packers play Sunday and saw 71% of the plays had motion, all I could think of was, this is not a good look for Mike McCarthy. Because all these players were here 2 years ago, Greg, and the offense did not look like this. There's got to be a coaching. Matt LaFleur is doing something special.
Oh, without question. And in fact, the difference is this. The difference is that now this offense is a highly schemed offense in terms of personnel, formations, motion, progression reads. Because of Rodgers and Devontae Adams and other players like Valdes-Scantling, who is a matchup type player, it still has the matchup element to it. So when Rodgers sees matchups that he likes, and we always think of Devontae Adams, and obviously in my view, he's been the best receiver in football this year. He can still attack those matchups, but it's much more highly schemed in a number of different areas this year, and that makes this offense really difficult to handle because Rodgers is obviously a great, great player. Oh, now, by the way, I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes, he will. I'd put him in today. Now, he had his worst quarter as a pro in Tampa. Let's go back to that game. Do you believe it was just a random Sunday, or can the Bucs, with Vita Vea coming back, do you think they'll duplicate the pressure they got on Aaron Rodgers?
I never think anything in the NFL is just random or fluky. I think that they created a lot of the issues with all their multiple fronts, their pressure looks, tying in coverage with pressure. But there's no question that the Packers will look at that game closely and they'll be better prepared. Now, Todd Bowles won't do exactly the same thing. No coach does exactly the same thing in a second meeting with a team, but I'm sure he'll still have different front looks. He will have pressure concepts, and the Packers will be far more prepared for it in this game. The question to me is, what will be the Packers' approach? Last week against the Rams, they were really balanced. If you remove the kneel downs at the end of the game, they had 37 called passes and 32 called runs, which by NFL standards is incredible balance. They run the football because that's Matt LaFleur's background. He comes from the McVay-Shanahan background. So I'm curious to see what the Packers' game plan approach going in is.
You tell me, athletically, talent-wise, the Bucs had success, their offense against the Packers' defense. How does the Packers' defensive personnel and schemes match up against Brady, do you believe, on film?
Well, that's a great question, because here's what I would think would happen. I think because we're not sure about Antonio Brown, I think you're going to see a lot of 12 personnel, meaning one back and two tight ends, with Gronkowski and Brate. Brate's become a factor the last number of weeks. We know that Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator for the Packers, would much prefer to play in his sub-defenses, meaning nickel and dime, 5 DBs or 6 DBs. They've, in fact, played with 6 defensive backs far more than any team in the league this year.
Wow.
So if the Bucks line up with two tight ends, what will Mike Pettine do? Will he line up in base personnel, which he does not like to do, or will he line up with 5 or 6 defensive backs? At times in that first matchup, week 6, he lined up with 6 defensive backs versus 2 tight ends. To me, that personnel matchup will be critical to this game.
Last 2 games for the Bucks, they're running the football. Is it health? I mean, you tell me, is it because guys are healthy, because the offensive line's getting more of a push? They've been very effective running last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think they realize with that O-line that has struggled at times throughout this season in pass protection that they do need to have some semblance of a run game. Ronald Jones obviously gives them some juice. You saw the difference last week. Fournette, he just does not look very good. I know he's had some success, but he certainly does not look anything like he did coming out of LSU. So Jones gives them a little more juice in that run game.
I like Green Bay in this game. What's the film tell you?
Yeah, I do too. These games are hard for me. I'm not a good picker of games, Colin, because I can give you 5 or 6 reasons on either side. But, I mean, you asked me, I would pick Green Bay to win this game.
All right, let's go to Buffalo, Kansas City. It's funny. I said all through December, Buffalo's the best team in the NFL. But then you get to the playoffs, and you face better coaching, better coordinators, and better units. And over the last 2 weeks, I started inspecting Buffalo, and, like, they can't run the ball at all now.
No.
At all. And I think to myself, boy, they're becoming really Josh Allen reliant. Does it look like that on film?
Oh, yeah. Last week, their first 20 plays were called passes. They didn't call a run until the 21st play of the game for their offensive snap. So, I mean, Josh is playing well. I mean, obviously, last week, they only scored 1 offensive touchdown. The Ravens did not blitz as much as I thought. I think Steve Spagnuolo, who's known to be very aggressive and has been this year, I think you're going to see pressure. Now, obviously, he's going to have to feel comfortable in the secondary, because one thing the Bills do a lot of is line up with 4 wide receivers. They do that close to 20% of their offensive snaps. So I don't know how he'll feel about matching up in the secondary versus 4 wide receivers. But this team is Josh Allen's team right now. They throw the ball. They want to throw the ball. They do it by choice. They put him in the gun. He's got second reaction ability, so they do feel that if there is pressure, he can somehow get out of it to make a throw or a run for a meaningful play. I don't think they're going to change that. They're not going to come out with Allen under center and hand the ball off to Devin Singletary 20 times.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So I think Steve Spagnuolo will be aggressive.
I want to talk about Mahomes. I was kind of blown away. He limped in the first half. He left with 7.5 minutes in the game, and they won. If you'd have taken Baker out 8 minutes to go in the third, Cleveland's getting shelled. I was shocked at the ease, especially on the perimeter, of Kansas City's offense against a very good Cleveland roster. I tend to think NBA teams are better at the flip the switch thing. I didn't like December, what I saw from the Chiefs. Did the film tell you it was as effortless and easy as it looked on television?
Well, the Browns do not have a great secondary. That's the thing. And we're going to assume Mahomes plays. I mean, I can't believe he's not going to play. So let's talk about Mahomes for a minute. Number one, he has not been great over the last month or so. He's been a little loose, a little undisciplined. He obviously can compensate and camouflage for that with great second reaction plays, but it hasn't quite happened as much. So it'll be interesting. But one thing, and this is kind of an X and O point, but it's a very difficult matchup, Colin, for teams, is when they line up Kelce as the single receiver to the short side of the field, and they go 3 wide receivers to the strong side of the field.
Yeah.
That's a very difficult matchup. That was the 20-yard touchdown he caught last week against Cleveland, where they actually left Denzel Ward because he was the boundary corner for the Browns, just like Tre'Davious White is the boundary corner for Buffalo. But that matchup is really, really difficult when Kelsey's the single receiver. And by the way, when Tyreek Hill is the inside slot receiver to the three receiver side, because he runs those deep over routes, those deep crossing routes, he runs away from people.
One of the reasons I like Kansas City this weekend, and I like Buffalo the last month, is that Kansas City's defensive weakness appears to be run defense, and the Bills don't run it. And so I kind of think just schematically, this is not a great matchup for Buffalo. They lost a running back, Moss, a couple weeks ago, and it's just gotten worse. When you look at film, my gut feeling is the weakness of the Chiefs will not be unveiled by Buffalo, and that's why I like Kansas City.
No, that won't happen in this game. And look, Buffalo makes no bones about it. They're going to throw the ball. They put the game in Josh Allen's hands. The thing that is, everybody talks about Josh's improved accuracy, and that's correct. But the other thing that has stood out is he looks so much more in command during games. They clearly feel that he can control the game, that he's not going to make the kinds of plays he made in his first 2 years where there'd be three or four plays in a game that you just scratch your head. It appears that he's past that point. So they feel very comfortable putting the game in his hands.
All right, so give me your big play of the week. This is the Bills' defense, which, by the way, will be challenged. I do think situationally in the red zone, they're very effective. I do think they'll hold Kansas City to a lot of field goals. I do. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game than we all predict. But give me your play of the week.
Well, it's interesting you say that because the Bills are really good in the red zone, but they're defined in the red zone. They play a lot of two shell, cover two, and that's the play we want to show. And let's go to it from last week. It's obviously the interception return for a touchdown by Taron Johnson, and they were in what we call red zone two, which, as I said, they play this kind of coverage basically more than any team in the NFL when you get into the red zone. And you're going to see here Lamar Jackson is in the shotgun. This is a third down play. Now he wants to get the ball to Mark Andrews, who's in the inside slot to Trips. You're going to see the two split safeties, Hyde and Poyer, who I think is the best safety duo in the league. And then you're going to see Tremaine Edmonds. He's on the line of scrimmage here, but he'll retreat because this is going to be, as I said, a red zone two look. And there's Taron Johnson. Now he's a landmark player. He drops to his spot and he watches the quarterback. Now, what Lamar Jackson wants to do is get the ball to Andrews. But notice Edmonds is inside of him, so he has to throw it to the outside. But Johnson is sitting right there. Lamar Jackson has to see this, Colin. This is just a play that the quarterback has to see. It's red zone two. The Bills play it as a foundational coverage in the red zone. Lamar Jackson has to know that, and he has to understand that he cannot make that throw. But the Bills are very good situationally, and they're very fundamentally sound with two really good safeties.
Yeah, defensive head coach Sean McDermott, one of the reasons why. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, great talking to you, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, I've known him since Portland, Oregon. Since that time, he's won 16 Emmys, and I've won none. He's one of the great guys, great writers, a storyteller, and now a part of Fox, and we just could not be happier just talking during the break. Tom Rinaldi, sideline reporter working the Bucks Green Bay game, now joining us live from New Jersey. By the way, I hear you have a bone to pick with me in my Hall of Fame standards.
But first of all, before we even get there, let's back up. I think you've done just fine without the Emmys there, Cowherd, okay? I think it's working out just fine for you. All right, let's go right to the Hall of Fame. This is one of the reasons I love the show so much, because of the clarity, perhaps wrong, but never in doubt. That's Cowherd. So here he's going to walk around with the card and the wallet, a la Bob Costas with Mickey Mantle and everything else. And joy immediately cuts you down to the proper size. So you're going to say then that Gale Sayers and or Sandy Koufax or any of the other folks that Joy talked about who are not just one story, I get it, but can you tell the story of the sport beyond this two-contract time limit that you've created? Can you tell the story of the sport appropriately, fully, without Gale Sayers and without Sandy Koufax? Listen, as usual, Cowherd bold, but then is kept in check by Joy.
Well, Joy keeps me in check for a lot of things. I did acknowledge that Sayers is the one that I get crushed on.
And the baseball is going to be different than the football.
Yeah, but if, Gale Sayers, he's the best player. He was the best running back 5 years, five Pro Bowls, injury, which, by the way, by today's medical standards, maybe would have played longer. He couldn't at the time. So listen, every even great policy in Washington, D.C. has a hole in it. I got a little hole in my argument. All right.
Okay, we'll give you that. We'll give
so
you that.
Were you, let's talk about this. Were you surprised that Brady's performance, Chris Godwin didn't play great, Gronk was a non-factor, Evans was shut down. If and I told you before the game they had seven catches, you would have thought, oh, they got blown out again. Were you kind of surprised by Brady's success?
So two things, Colin. When Brady went up to and did the interview with Aaron Andrews right after the game, the very first thing that he did, and I thought Aaron asked him a great question. She didn't start with his performance or what it meant. She started with their defense and all that they created to shorten the field and give Brady an opportunity on, to reverse what had been a two subpar performances against the Saints. And he quickly credited the defense and essentially said, yeah, that's why we're here. Did he execute properly? Yes, he did. But the defense really was the headline. And of course, Brady making his way, coming to the other conference, teaming with Arians, going down to Tampa Bay, and now getting back to a conference championship game is just, it's incredible. In a way, right? It's the matchup we all want to see, the yeah. greatest of all time, perhaps against the greatest of his generation. I don't know, you had said, Colin, you know, we're just licking our chops. We can't wait for Sunday to get here.
Now, do you ask him about the weather in Lambeau? Because he's used to it. So does Gronk, but almost nobody else on that roster.
He's more than familiar with all the practices that he's had. He's had great snow games, the epic tuck rule game, et cetera.
Yeah.
And he really said, It's much, much more, Colin, and I don't think this will surprise you, about the wind or about rain or moisture or wet conditions than it is about the cold, unless it's truly bitter, meaning 25 or 20 or 15 or below. So with that in mind, mid-20s forecast for the high Sunday, a 60% chance of snow at Lambeau, and we wouldn't want it any other way.
That's right.
Could there be anything greater than a conference championship game, perhaps with that kind of machinery coming across and blowing the snow so we can see the lines, et cetera, evoking the tuck rule game, all of that. It is a dream scenario if it works out that way and it's a close game heading into the fourth quarter.
The players you talk to, Green Bay, Tampa, the difference between Super Bowl and conference championship. Conference championships have a little bit of a Super Bowl feel to me. These are the two games the country's watching, 35 million. You talk to players about that.
I think, Colin, that this is a sneaky answer here. A number of players acknowledge that they felt as much or more pressure in a conference championship game because you're this close. It's that tantalizing to be one game away from making it to the Super Bowl, obviously the ultimate stage in the sport. And to win this game, as Tom Brady said, this has proven to be the most difficult game to win.
Yeah.
And probably he's in his 14th version of this, which is mind-blowing, more than twice as much as the next person on the list, which is Montana at 7. But the pressure connected to try to take that next step, cross the threshold into the Super Bowl, is a real big factor in these games and the two games we'll see Sunday.
Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers, I thought, had the best year, maybe Allen, Stephon Diggs second, but in terms of quarterback, wide receiver connection, you have any sense of why it's so special? I mean, it's like they've been playing together for 15 years. They have a real sense of each other.
Even though they haven't been, right? And it didn't necessarily start with them like two peas in a pod or with the telepathy that they've built here pretty quickly. And it exceeds the statistical measurements or the simple metrics on a page. It comes down to, Colin, the very best you like to see manifest between two teammates, and that's wordless communication. It's done even without language. It can be done in a subtle hand gesture, in a look across the line, in a single expression that suggests, this is what the defense is giving us. I know what the plan was, but you and I have our own plan because we have our own communication built on trust, manifestation, execution, and that has really, really borne fruit. It is a premier connection in the sport, And if Tampa can't control it, it's going to be a long day.
What'd you make of the interaction between Breeze and Brady Sunday? I thought it was pretty. I saw virally. It got millions of retweets. I thought it was pretty cool.
I did, in a way. I thought it was a bookend to the week, right? The week had started with the great social post there by Brady's team with the History Channel. They had texted each other at the start of the week. They've known each other going all the way back to 99 when they faced each other in the Big Ten with Michigan against Purdue. But that scene of Brady coming out with Breeze and his wife tossing passes to Breeze's children, I think tells you all you need to know about the enduring connection between these two, who can understand each other, Colin, in a way that so few others can, about the commitment to endure and prevail and persist through doubt and injury and change. And that's what each has done. In this case, the matchup itself perhaps didn't live up to the storyline, but that was a beautiful postscript, that scene.
Finally, Antonio Brown, certainly in the last 6 weeks, became a very interesting kind of a problem for opponents and an interesting kind of element added to Tom Brady's arsenal. What's the latest on his injury?
I think that's going to be a bit of a mystery here. He's progressing, at least that was the characterization that we heard from the Bucs. But we're going to have to see. They were caught off guard, and I think AB was as well, by being limited in the game. There weren't any suggestions, pardon me, Colin, that he would be heading into the Saints game, but clearly he was limited. As he continues to work through practice this week, he is a very key weapon for Brady. As you suggested, later in the season, in particular in the last 6 weeks, the connection between the two was only increasing and peaking at the right time. He's a really key weapon for Brady, and we'll have to see, particularly when they've been putting him in the slot, Colin. Yeah. And we'll have to see how much he's able to go and how explosive he can be. By the way, one other quick thought here about the cold. Brady suggested in the cold, quarterbacks have an advantage. I thought this was fascinating because you can throw the ball just as fast. You can process just as fast mentally. But everyone else, when the temperatures get really cold, slows down a bit. So that shifts to quarterback advantage. I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, also, by the way, a receiver knows where he's going and the DB doesn't, so your footing can be huge. All right, he's Tom Rinaldi. We just couldn't, as a company, be happier. And, buddy, when you get out here to California and when they allow us to have a glass of wine at a restaurant, it's on me. I don't know when that's going to be in California, but it's great seeing you, and welcome to the team.
So appreciate you having me so much, Colin. Great to see you.